ATS. The following is an exclusive ATS Mix investigative report.
Well, John, tell me about your trip to Monterey.
I love a man that just gets right to the point. Yes, indeed. Johnny Scoop Anonymous received a email from a ATS member by the name of Project Firefly, who also happened to hear the Ed Grimsley interview that you and I did, and he wanted to see if, indeed, you could capture these strange things in the sky with infrared devices. So he and a number of other people invested in some IR devices, and they started a sky-watching group, which I guess they already had the sky-watching group, but they had moved now into, obviously, these infrared devices. And they started right off the get-go with being able to see some pretty odd stuff.
Well, your equipment, John, I mean, you took all your pro stuff, right?
I have to distinguish that I have pro gear, and then I also have what's called the prosumer line of gear. And when I go out on the field, I'm not going to be dragging along any $4,000 to $10,000 cameras right. with me, because those are more what you would be using in the studio, and obviously they don't work too well in the field, because a lot of times it's hard to find an AC outlet where you're at. So
we can find a tree, but it doesn't do you much good, because that bark doesn't generate too much electricity.
And then the squirrels chew on your cord.
I love the squirrels when they chew on my cord.
I knew you would. Anyway,
sorry.
So
but at least they're not saving my nuts.
But bump. So bump. Project Firefly, by the leader's name is Steve. Steve
okay.
Contacted me, and he says, you should come up here because we're capturing some pretty wild stuff.
Excuse me, John, but isn't Steve a member of AboveTopSecret.com?
That is correct. He is a member of ATS. In fact, I believe he may have joined not too long after hearing our interview with Ed Grimsley and my doing my investigation up there in
really?
Calistoga.
That's correct. Man, well, then we actually recruited a member.
And let's mark that down. That's one for the good guys right there. One. And thank you, Steve. All right.
Yeah.
Yes, thank
you,
Steve.
Yeah, we need to applaud him next time I get on the computer.
But you know how you and I are constantly receiving emails and U2Us, which are the private message systems of ATS, saying, hey, look, I've got this, and would you listen to this, and here's my account.
Yeah, sure.
And we don't really know, and we mean no offense by this, we don't know if you're a loon or if you're on the level, all right?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's like you say, John, I mean, it's a roll of the dice for us when people call our toll-free number. I don't have it in front of me, John, so I can't do my in front of me shtick.
Well, that number would be 1-877-417-2204. It's toll free.
I knew it would come back. I knew it would come back to you if I give you long enough time.
Thank you.
But anyway, you know, I mean, we get all kinds of weird calls, folks, and I mean, we never know if they're going to be legit or if it's, you know, as John says lovingly, you know, one of you loons. So it's a crapshoot every time somebody contacts us, John. But you know, Steve really turned out to be a wonderful person, didn't he?
Yes, he did. In fact, I obviously was not all that eager to do another large trip out and about, but he sent some video that was extremely compelling, and then he sent some more video that was even more compelling, and it was like, well, all righty then, this seems like something's going on. So I decided to go ahead and bring the ATS credit card along with me, and off I went. And went up to Monterey. The only problem was Mother Nature was not kind to me in this past 5 days that I was up in Monterey.
Did it age you a little bit?
Well, yes, it did. And the reason is because there are 1,000 forest fires right now happening in California.
I read about that.
Very good. And a number of them are happening near Monterey, and all that smoke and ash is filtering over and falling onto Monterey, obscuring the skyline so that you can't even see. I was watching jets or hearing jets, but not able to see them. I took a drive by the airport, and I'm about a half a mile from the airport, and I could not see any jets landing. That's how much smoke and haze, wow. And my car was completely covered over with ash. It was like Mount St. Helens type effect. You remember when all the ash?
Oh yeah, yeah. And up? I mean, it was like somebody smoked a million cigarettes and just decided to empty the ashtray or something, right?
Well, I've never heard that analogy, but yes, I guess that would work.
But see, I've never been to Mount St. Helens, so I can only equate it to people I've seen smoke.
All right. Well, yes. So, yes, probably a million smokers all dropping their ashtrays at the same time.
Okay, good. I got a picture of it now.
Yes. Anyway, so what we ended up doing was we, of course, then since we could not view the sky, even though we were set up, I had my gear, they had their gear. And by the way, I have to tell you, their place is set up very scientifically. It's almost like a mad scientist laboratory. They've got wires going all over the place, hooked up into all sorts of electronic gear and monitors and laptops and PCs, and they have guys manning monitors while the other guys are monitoring the skies, and then they rotate in shifts. They do this very scientifically, and one guy is marking down times, and they do time stamps, and they're taking a very scientific approach about it because anything they do see, they want to be able to back that up as being obviously witnessed by more than one person. And also, too, they are corroborating with data that they're getting from NASA and other websites that provide you with satellite information so that they can then rule out that this is not something that it could be explainable.
Right.
Anyway, I had a chance to talk with Steve after I came back here from Monterey. I was a little disappointed, as I said, although I had a wonderful time up there. And this is how it went with Steve and I when we talked about
good.
My trip.
I'd love to hear it.
All right.
Now, continuing in our pursuit to deny ignorance, the following is a special edition of the ATS Mix. Now, here's Johnny Anonymous.
Well, Dave, as I said before, I've been up in Monterey for the past 4 or 5 days after reading a post by a gentleman, one of our members here on ATS, by the name of Project Firefly. That's the name he goes at ATS. And because of some compelling video footage that he sent me with the use of IR devices that he is using in Monterey, I decided to do an ATS investigation. And so I went up to Monterey, and I had a chance to meet up with Project Firefly. In fact, on the phone right now, I have the Project Firefly leader, Steve. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hey, Johnny. Doing real good. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. I got home safely, obviously.
Outstanding.
And I just have to ask, Dave and I had been talking earlier about the skies being so cloudy and smoky. What is the current weather situation like? Are the fires still prevalent?
Well, they say that the major fire up here is only about 10 to 20% contained, which is not good news. It's massive. Two small fires have joined into one great big fire, and they say, well, there's approximately 1,000 different fires in the Central California area right now.
Wow. Now, while I was up there with you and your research group, I would have to say that the weather was not so kind to us.
Yeah. It's a classic combination of smoke and good old Monterey fog does not make for good sky viewing.
No, it does not. In fact, are you still getting those large pieces of ashes? I have to tell our listeners and our members that while I was up there, my car, it was almost like a mini Mount St. Helens event going on. I had ash all over, dusting all over my car. Is that still prevalent?
Absolutely, and it's rather sick. It looks like everything around here has dandruff. So it really, I had to sweep the back deck about every 2-3 hours just to, so I could see the deck. It's that bad. And I'd say we're about 30 miles from the nearest fire here.
And are any of them being contained?
As far as I can tell on the news right now, no.
In my talking with Dave, I had mentioned briefly that where you folks are doing your sky watching, you actually are located next to some type of, and I believe it's some type of military installation or a university or something. Tell everybody a little bit about what would happen if you just spit over your fence.
Well, if you threw a cat over my fence, you would hit the Naval Postgraduate School, which is one of the largest weather facilities for all of the armed forces. And it's centered here, just basically right over the fence from me here. It has been there. It used to be the old Del Monte Hotel back in days of old, where peacocks roamed, and it was quite the elitist, almost like a pebble beach of the time. Now it's strictly, they say, for instructing meteorologists in the military, and there's huge Doppler radar in effect here in the whole Magilla. They don't do balloon releases or anything like that around here, at least, you know, not that we're aware of. But it is, it covers about, I'd say about 10 acres of ground, and there's a lake and a huge, huge facility here.
So with the lack of weather balloons being released there, I guess we could probably rule out a Prophet Yahweh scenario.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, listen, I'm sure a lot of our listeners and members would be kind of interested to find out how your Project Firefly research group kind of got together. So if you could kind of briefly summarize how you folks all got together and how you got interested into sky watching.
Well, it kind of started, I would say for me personally, just a couple of years ago, I got a good deal on a first-generation scope, and I didn't do much looking up with it. I was just basically looking around at critters and stuff, and I was kind of playing around with telescopes and seeing if I could hook things up with cameras and looking up and stuff, and that's when I really started to see that, yeah, you can look up with these things. And I was kind of stunned and amazed at the things I could see. At the time, a lot of satellites, obvious satellites, and the likes. So we kind of, me and a friend of mine, Deke, who we were, we grew up skateboarding back in the 70s together. We just kind of hung out down at the beach about a mile from here that has a really good view of the Monterey Bay, lots of good sky. Took a couple of cameras and the old night vision. We started doing this, and then we heard there was a gentleman locally who had some third generation at the beach. And we happened to run into this gentleman. He was nice enough to hand around some goggles. We looked up at those and said, you know, there got to be a cheaper way to do this. These goggles were running $3,000-$4,000 a shot. So I was the guinea pig who invested in the digital set of iGen. I think it was made by Night Owl. It's a digital format instead of third generation, and you can hook it directly up to any recording device. Started recording about a month and a half ago on an old VCR thing we had until we figured out how to record straight into our hard drive. And we've been doing it like that ever since. He has a friend of his that he used to surf with and do music named Bones, and I got a buddy of mine named Tony who I used to collect Pez with and still do. And we all just kind of got together here in my house, and we just got into the habit of getting together here on weekends and tried to do some documenting, you know, getting the cardinal points down on the deck, seeing if we could figure out what distances were. And that's when I signed up at ATS and kind of met you through a thread, and you turned me on to some wonderful software to help us keep track of all the satellites.
Right. Now, the group that you've kind of pieced together here, the Project Firefly group, you folks have kind of approached this in a more scientific manner than a lot of people that are out there sky watching. And I had briefly mentioned how you had kind of a regimented approach to rotating the people so you guys don't burn out each other's retinas.
Yeah.
Tell everybody a little bit about how that works and what the routine is.
Sure. We have three people. We try to have at least three people on hand. One person out in the easy chair. I tell you, that's the most important piece of skywatching equipment, a good comfortable chair you can recline in, because you're going to be down there for a while looking up. We have attached to the iGen, we have a camera accessory out there called the OtterPod. It's a soft padded handle that really makes for good stable shooting. We stick that person out in the chair with the cable coming in. To one of the cable splits goes to the hard drive, one of the cable splits goes to our monitor. We put a person on the monitor, or sometimes we also have some virtual reality goggles that we can use, just to kind of mix it up a little bit, because there's so much going on here, it's good to have multiple pairs of eyes. The third person is standing in the doorway between the outside and the inside, so in case there is a sighting, we can verify if that can be seen with the naked eye or not. So that's how we try to do it, and we try to get degrees up off the horizon, an approximation north, southeast, north by northeast. Yeah, just try to get it, make some measurements here, and then we try to compare at the same time on the laptop with what the computer is telling us should be flying over our zip code. And we can eliminate about 8 out of 10 flyovers.
That's perfect. Now, something else that I thought was kind of interesting is that while you folks are doing this and you do the rotation, you're still letting everything roll. You guys don't stop and start. You've got a kind of like a consistent timeline going on, don't you?
Absolutely. We have a big giant digital clock with the temperature and the time and all that good stuff on it. And whenever we change people, we call it just a quick slate. We just hand the camera off, slate over to the time again. So if we get back to throwing it on the hard drive and want to go back to an area, we can refer to it. We keep lots of notes. It's really important to get a good Costco box of legal pads handy and a couple of Sharpies, because if you're not writing this stuff down, I'm telling you, there's so much going on up there every night. Literally, I mean, I would say dozens of sightings. And once again, 8 out of 10 of these things, we can, with a pretty good approximation, tell you what those are.
How long was it after you purchased your IR or your iGen, the Night Owl NV2020 device, was it before you actually captured or saw your first object?
Absolutely. The very first night we shut it on, I mean, we turned it on and pointed it up. I don't think we were filming for more than maybe 20 minutes, half an hour or so, when we saw our first little, what we call members of the fleet, these little things that kind of fly in formation that we cannot see with the naked eye. They have a very unusual pattern, not very predictable, because they're never there at the same quadrant of sky or ever there at the same time of night. But we've seen these in clusters of up to 8.
Wow. Now,
Now,
how is it that you're able to possibly rule out that these are possibly crafts or some other object other than something organic or like a bird, bat, or bug?
Well, we didn't see like birds, bats, and bugs, but we got hours of that. And usually you kind of tell by where you're focused. If you're pulling the focus in at a certain rate, you kind of get the feel that this is a heck of a lot closer than miles out. That being said, after about 20 hours of doing this, you really get a good feel for the difference between the way the bats and the birds move.
Right.
And the way that, you know, the things that are other than that. We can definitely rule out a lot of these things because when we have that person who's standing in between, you can see birds, bats, and bugs with the naked eye. And with the IR, it's one of those things where, okay, can we get some backup here? Can we get, you know, let's get somebody standing in between. We'll say, for instance, hey, Tony, can you see that with the naked eye, right? And yes, no, and then we write that down.
Sure. Now, one of the most compelling videos that you sent me, all of them that you sent me was very compelling, but one in particular that you sent me I found extremely interesting because in the onset it appeared to look like just 3 satellites entering into the view screen, and then
right.
They proceeded to do something. Tell our listeners about that evening and what that occurrence was like.
I can't believe that was on the 27th or 28th. We were getting kind of ready to wrap it up. We wanted to get a shot of the International Space Station. We were trying 2 nights in a row. And the first night we tried, it kind of blinked out on us about a third of the way across the sky. So we said, well, tomorrow night it'll be in a better quadrant. We'll look there. Well, we kind of shot that, and that was okay and groovy, and okay, let's get this thing packed up and ready to go. And as we're pulling the pan away, these 3 things just drop into the field of view. 3 objects, spherical, sort of like for lack of a better word, round, spherical. One on the left was about 3 times the size of the 2 that were kind of following it. It just kind of traveled together. The 2 on the right would interchange position and go over each other, I think maybe 3 or 4 times, before they all kind of froze in what we call the, okay, guys, do your impression of a constellation routine. They held that position for at least a good 1 or 2 count and then would proceed further down, and then there's a house in the way here that they kind of drop behind. We were facing, I believe, north at that point in time. And I think the whole sighting took, it was one of the longer sightings we had. How long do you think that was, Johnny? Was that, I'd say, you know, inside of a minute, but one of the more interesting minutes we have, definitely.
I would say that it would probably, the observation from the video that I saw was at least 40 seconds.
Yeah.
I found that, like I was going to say, I did find that very compelling. In fact, that was one of the reasons why. That was probably the incentive video that said, hey, look, Johnny, you better go to Monterey and go check this out. And so that's why I contacted you to hopefully be able to witness these for myself. And there was something else while we were there, since we did have, and I'm kind of jumping around here because of time constraints, but while we were there, and we were suffering, of course, from bad weather here this past weekend, we started reviewing over some other data and doing some analysis on some other footage that you guys had captured. And I guess you guys have literally just boxfuls of tape that you guys haven't been able to...
About 40 hours, I guess, yeah. Yeah. Close to 40 hours, I think, yeah.
While we're doing this, Steve and Deke and Bones and Tony and I, we're reviewing over this footage and everything, and we're all glued to the screen looking it over. And it's always good to have another set of eyes to be able to look at this stuff. And we're slowing it down, going in reverse, you know, doing everything we should be doing frame by frame. Well, Steve suddenly says, "Hey, you want to see something kind of neat?" Well, okay. And he pulls out this manila envelope. And he pulls out this, I'm assuming it was like about an 8x10 photograph copy that you handed me. And tell everybody, and because I haven't told anybody about this yet, so I wanted you to be the first to tell everybody about this very extraordinary photograph you got, and tell everybody how you captured that photograph.
Well, I think this is back in January, late January. Let's see, I was using my old, this is before I got the digital stuff, I had the old first generation scope, and I was playing around with my telescope and a digital camera, trying to hold it all together. Pointed the telescope, it's in, let's see, it's a 900 millimeter, 6 inch. The night vision is a doubler, and I think the camera itself was like a 5 power, so do the math. Anyway, I took about 100 shots straight up, and somewhere in the last dozen or so, I got this image. And you really can't see it until you kind of, you know, like raise the contrast a little bit, and it looks like, well, it's huge. That's all I can say. It's the biggest thing I've ever seen. It's awfully big.
If you were to guesstimate approximately where, how far from the Earth that may have been, do you think that was within our atmosphere?
I would say in orbit. I would just say in orbit, because that's where I kind of had the telescope focused. And that's basically, since I don't have a rangefinder and I don't know how big it is or how fast it was going or anything else, I got one shot out of 100. And it's one of those things, I call it my lucky shot, because at the time, I was just taking chances. And as you know, anybody who's ever tried to take pictures through a telescope, the further out your focus, the more shake you have, the more odds you've got of not getting anything clear. And even this one isn't crystal clear. You can see a bit of wiggle, but it's one of those shots where you just kind of look at and go, what the heck could that possibly be?
And just to let our listeners know, after I had raised both eyebrows and was looking at this and going, wow, I don't think I have ever run across anything quite like this, except maybe something that somebody had either photoshopped or created in CGI, to give our listeners kind of an idea of what this thing was. The size, the enormity of this thing, it was coming from the bottom right of the print and moving upward to the left-hand side, and it took up on this 8x10 almost 3/4 of the print itself.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's why I say, if that thing was at that height, and once again, how do we know how big it is if we don't know what it is? It's very interesting. It's the most interesting picture I think I have in my collection. So,
well, from what I understand right now, what you and the Project Firefly group are doing is you are compiling these videos, you're getting your data together, you're doing some more analysis, and then eventually, I guess, you are planning on releasing this to the public. Is that not correct?
Absolutely. We want to get this all out there. We want you all to see it, and also to know that it can be done without having to, you know, spend the rent. There are good, inexpensive, clever ways to get this experience without, you know, feeling like you got to spend thousands and thousands of dollars. You can get pretty decent imagery, as you can well see. For, you know, we figured it out. We spent, you know, around $700 for everything we have.
But that doesn't include the monitor and the laptop.
No. That's just basically the iGen. And that also figures in the virtual reality glasses. and the cable. I mean, it's all the little things we added up. The budget was try to keep it under 1,000.
Right? Sure.
So we did it. We did it much under that. Yeah.
Now, I noticed that you were not using a tripod, but you had a some type of stabilizing handheld device that was attached to it. What was that thing that you had on there?
Well, we have two different chairs out there. We have the one chair, which is an old barber chair we use, that's very smooth, great bearings on it. We have an old microphone, boom mic, that we have converted to accept an OtterPod that we placed the iGen onto. And
now, what is the OtterPod?
The OtterPod is a camera accessory I developed this year. It's in its patent process. It's a small padded camera handle that fits absolutely anything with a quarter-inch tripod mount.
Right.
And it just makes for more stable pictures. The whole idea was to get better pictures with smaller cameras that move when you just hit the shutter button.
So if someone did not have access to a tripod, they obviously could use this OtterPod and
absolutely
be able to still have fairly stable video.
Yeah. It just gives you just a little bit more stability, and the comfort. It's a good soft grip, and it just gets you something to lean into. And for me, it's not like I'm getting old, Jenny, but I need all the help I can get when it comes to these cameras these days. So, yeah, that's kind of what motivated me, was shooting 100 pictures and having 30 blurry ones just because the camera was so small. So,
right. Well, I'm hoping to be able to come up there again when the weather gets better and the fires die down, and I'm obviously hoping that you will then send me an email to let me know such, so that I can come back up there. Because, you know, even though I enjoyed your company and the rest of the group, I really was kind of hoping to be able to capture something myself.
Yes, and we somewhat take, you know, we kind of feel guilty. You come all the way up here, and even though we had nothing to do with that condition, we look forward to your return because we had a blast ourselves.
We'll be looking forward, hopefully, to sometime in the future when you guys get your video and your data compiled and be able to submit it to, we hope you'll submit it here and post it on ATS, won't you?
Oh, you can count on it. You guys got first dibs, and we hope to have it up, hopefully, by August, September at the latest.
Okay, now, can I have permission? I'm doing this, obviously, over the waves here so that I can have 23 million witnesses to this. But I would like to have permission right here and now to possibly take a couple of capture frames from that one compelling video that you sent of what looks like three satellites interacting with one another, but obviously they're not satellites. And will you give me permission to allow me to post that on the podcast thread?
Yes. Yes, I will.
Fantastic.
You have my permission. Yes, please.
Fantastic. We've been talking with Steve-O from Project Firefly all the way in Monterey. Steve, we appreciate your time. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Right back at you, Johnny. Have a good one.
Thank you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
And so there you go, Dave Aru. That's how that all worked out. It's too bad that the weather did not cooperate with us. But I did enjoy my time with Steve and Deke and Tony and Bones and all the other people that showed up there. And I think that they're doing it right. They've got the right incentive. They've got the enthusiasm, and they're trying to do it scientifically. And that to me adds a lot more credibility to the whole process.
Well, I'm really blown away by this whole thing, and I really just got one last question. That is, did you guys have a campfire?
Yes, we did, Dave.
Did you have bush beads?
Absolutely, Dave.
Okay, and did y'all do the what's that movie? Blazing Saddles.
Uh huh. What about it? Did we watch the movie?
I don't have a monitor in Saigon, so I have to just rely on my memory, which is really going to be testing the envelope here.
Uh-huh.
I forgot what I was saying, John. What'd you say?
You were going to say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.AboveTopSecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll be right back.